Zazen is used as a term for Buddha activity. Sometimes people use Zazen as a term for something that they do. Vivian, would you mind moving over? Would that be okay for you? And then Rich, could you move over to where Vivian was? Thank you. And Dorley, could you move over again? So Zazen is a term that is used, if you use the expression, by me, as a synonym for Buddha activity. But some people use the word Zazen for, you know, what they're doing. Like, I'm doing Zazen. Some people use it that way. And Buddha activity allows people to use Zazen, the word, you know, in a variety of ways. So I'm just mentioning to you that the way I'm using it is that Zazen is liberating beings so they can live in peace. That's what Zazen is. That's the way I'm using the word, I mean. And I think, I also think that that's the way the ancestors of the Zen tradition used it. And they knew that some people were using Zazen in the way of speaking about their personal activity. Many, including me, when they first start practicing Zazen, they think that it's what they're doing, and they think other people, Zazen is something different from theirs, and the other people's Zazen is what they're doing. So you're doing Zazen, you're doing Zazen, you're doing Zazen, I'm doing Zazen. What you're doing is your Zazen, what you're doing is your Zazen, what I'm doing is my Zazen. A lot of people start practicing that way. And they actually, you hear the term, I think I heard the term my Zazen quite a bit over the years. My Zazen. Have you heard that expression, my Zazen? I hear less often the term our Zazen. Less often. But we could say it a few times. No, okay, ready? We're 1, 2, 3. Our Zazen. Once more. Our Zazen. And again. Our Zazen. The number of times our Zazen has been said in this world has increased quite a bit just now. We could have a session, and if we said that over and over for a week, I think we would might exceed the number of times our Zazen has been said in the world. It's not said very often, our Zazen. But that's the way I use the term, and again, I'm suggesting that's the way the tradition understands Zazen. It's not what one person's doing on her own. By herself. That's not the Zazen of the tradition. The Zazen of the tradition is Buddha's Zazen. And Buddha's Zazen is not the Zazen of Buddha alone. Buddha's Zazen is the same practice as all beings. That's the practice which liberates all beings. My practice by myself does not liberate all beings. Matter of fact, it traps me if I'm doing my Zazen by myself, if I think that. But our Zazen, Buddha activity, is, not, I wouldn't even say, it actually, it is the liberation of beings. the way we're practicing together is our liberation. And we are practicing together. And that way that we're practicing together is freedom right now. And as I said yesterday, the difference is just a matter of discrimination. That we think, oh, liberation must be something other than the way we're living together right now. And once again, in order to let go of that discrimination between this and peace, or between this and freedom, we have to be kind to that discrimination. We have to be kind to our storytelling. I'm sitting here, and Zazen, or Buddha activity, is the way my sitting right here imperceptibly accords with all beings. Right now, the way my sitting here imperceptibly accords with all beings, that's Buddha activity. The way what you're sitting right now, everybody in this room is sitting, the way each of you is sitting imperceptibly accords with all beings. That, and that imperceptible accord is peace and harmony. And once again, it is imperceptible. We cannot perceive how we are actually practicing together. We can perceive, for example, 50 people in the room practicing together. But how these 50 people are actually practicing together is more than, is not limited to our perception. And if one of these people stood up and said, I'm not practicing with you people, I'm leaving, you could perceive that and say, well, we have one less person practicing with us. That person left. That's a perception, a perfectly good perception. And if you're kind to that perception, and kind of the perception that there's 50 of us practicing together, you can open to the imperceptible. You can elect the imperceptible way, which is beyond what we can see here, and includes more than 50 people. It includes all beings. That's Buddha activity, and that's going on right now. We can perceive that we do something by ourselves. Like I have a perception of this hand rising in the air, and I could perceive that I did this by myself. That's a perception. It's not true that I did this by myself, but I could see it that way. If I'm kind to it, I can see that that's just a joke. I can understand that these hands moving are not operated by a self. Also, by me, or I don't operate these hands. But I'm here while these hands are operating. And so are you. And you also are not operating these hands. These hands are moving by being in accord with all of you. And being in accord with this movement is not you controlling them or operating them. It's you loving them and being kind to them and letting them do their thing. And you are supporting this movement. And you are responsible for it, even though you don't control it. You're not in control of me. I'm not in control of you. She smiles, but I didn't make her smile. But you can't smile without me. Every smile you do, I'm included in your smiling. Every frown you make, I'm there supporting you to frown. But I'm not in control of your smile. And neither are you. You say, 1, 2, 3, I'm going to smile. Mm. But the way you smiled, if you could see, would surprise you. The way you smile is a surprise. If you look carefully, the way your hands move, the way your tongue moves, the way your body moves, it surprises you. It's doing things you did not imagine were going to happen, but they appeared for you. Because we're doing this together. That's what the tradition is trying to transmit, is this imperceptible accord with all beings. And to encourage people to be compassionate to our perception of beings, and being compassionate to our perception does not mean getting rid of our perceptions. To be compassionate to our stories of all beings, not to deny our stories or destroy our stories, but to be kind to them and free of them. And that freedom allows us to fully realize our life beyond our stories. Our life naked of our stories. Our life before our stories. So when we sit, we can sit and we can remember stillness. And we can remember that we don't have to move to be at peace with all beings. We don't have to move to imperceptibly accord with all beings. We do not have to move to fully resonate throughout all space and time. The Buddha activity is here. We don't have to move to enter it or realize it. So actually remembering stillness is remembering not to go someplace else. Buddha activity is here. And any discrimination that I need to be someplace else is allowed. Buddha activity allows you to think I have to go someplace else to realize Buddha activity. Is that clear?
Yes.
But allowing that thought, I have to go someplace else, goes very well with remembering stillness. I don't have to get away from the thought that I have to go someplace else. And I don't have to go someplace else to accord with all beings. Even if I think I have to go someplace else to accord with all beings, I still accord with all beings. Even if I actually do get up and move 2 seats to the right, I still accord with all beings. I asked some other people to move, and could I ask you to move? Would you move that way, about 4 inches? I say 4 because I think you have about 4 inches left on your mat. Thank you. Now I can see John better. I can see his peepers. So again, the discrimination that my activity is different from yours, or my activity is different from the activity of all beings, that discrimination, it's possible to become free of that. It's not true that my activity is different from the activity of all beings. I'm saying that's not true. My activity cannot be different from yours, separate from yours. That's not true that it can be. But I can have that thought. And again, Buddha activity is not trying to get rid of that thought. It is the liberation of that thought. And you can't liberate the thought that your activity is different from mine by getting rid of it. But you can liberate it by being really compassionate towards it or with it. And when you get, did I say get rid of it? No, I said let go of it, right? Not get rid of it. Let it be free. Let it be free. Not try to get rid of it. Let it be free. And when it's free, then you will not be suffering from the delusion that your life is separate from anybody else's. And that is Buddha activity. That's what, again, in Zen is called Zazen. Or also, it's called Zen. Zen is short. One of the nice things about Zen is it's short. Z-E-N. And in China, it was short, too. Chan. So in China, it was Chan. In Korea, it's Son. In Japan, it's Zen. And in America, it's all three. But usually we use one at a time. Because that's simpler. Zen is nice and short and simple. It's simple for liberating all beings so they may live in peace. It's short for that. It's short for peace and harmony among all living beings. It's short for great compassion, which liberates beings. It's short for that. So now we have the Zen of this and the Zen of that. We don't have the liberating all beings so they may dwell in peace of that. Right? Like on the way to Tassajara, there's this nursery called Zen Nursery. It doesn't say liberating all beings so they may dwell in peace nursery. But that's what it means. That's what we're really doing. But we get caught by our wonderful discriminating mind. The discriminations are not the problem. It's getting stuck in them that's the problem. Discriminations are not blocking Buddha activity. They are the grist for the mill of Buddha activity. They are the way to demonstrate Buddha activity. Watch this. 1, 2, 3. I'm going to make a discrimination and then I'm going to leap beyond it. Ready? Here I go. Poo! Did you see that one? I don't know. I don't know what happened, but I lost that discrimination in the process. Did you know which one it was? I don't know what happened, but the discrimination was going on while I was playing with you. We play with the discriminations. We relax with them. We create with them. Constantly creating with these discriminations, not getting stuck in them. That's the problem. I see somebody's hand raising.
I didn't raise it.
Oh, you didn't? I didn't say you raised it. I didn't say. I didn't accuse you of raising it. I just said. But I did say, I see somebody's hand. We see somebody's hand.
Our hand.
We see our hand.
I can understand just in a little bit.
That's what you say.
The power of getting past my discriminations. And that feels liberating. But what I have a little more difficulty getting past
is things like systemic cruelty and colonization and stuff like that.
So you have trouble getting past them, and I would say don't try to get past systemic cruelty. Don't try to get past it. And also don't try to stop before you arrive there. If you've got systemic cruelty, I'm saying systemic cruelty is calling for compassion. Cruelty is calling for compassion. Monsters are calling for compassion. Monsters are frightened beings who do not feel loved, supported, and listened to. And when they are met with compassion, the monsters will be converted to peace and harmony.
I can say a monster.
So don't get past the monsters.
Right.
Meet the monsters. That's Zazen. Zazen is to meet monsters and also to meet the cute little Zen students who happen to be you. Meet your cute little body. Meet your monster body. Meet your everything scary about you. Meet it. And also, don't try to meet it by yourself on your own. Meet it with the support of all beings, because all beings are begging you to meet your monsters. It is our responsibility to meet systemic cruelty. And it's my responsibility, but my responsibility is shared with all beings. All beings want me to fulfill my responsibility to meet all systemic cruelty. You all want me to do that, don't you? What?
Yeah,
you do. But did you know we want you to do it? Yeah, everybody wants you to do it too. Might it be a little difficult? Yeah. Do you need some support? And the support, part of the support is everybody wants you to do this. However, some of the people who want you to do this understand that you might have a little difficulty. And so they're patient with you. And when they see you saying, I don't want to deal with any more of this cruelty, they say, much understandable, sweetheart. Yeah, it's really hard. You take as much time as you need before you're ready to meet these monsters. But that's, just by the way, that's what I want you to do eventually. I'm not ready to do that. Okay. Can you be kind to, I'm not ready to do that? Yes. So we start with find something that we can allow, and gradually we'll be able to meet these monsters and liberate them and everybody else along with them. This is a heroic process. And some people say, I don't want to be a hero. Okay. Non-heroes are allowed in the heroic process. Everybody's welcome. And everybody really wants everybody else to be a hero, even if they don't want to be. And you want people to heroically support you in your resistance to being a hero. Heroically allow me to be the one who does not want to do this hard work. Okay. You're going to do it, but right now you're not. You don't want to do it. And I support you right now to be who you are, little monster. Monstrous resistance to the great work of Buddha activity, which we're living in right now, and everything's trying to help us accept where we're living. As I often mention, Buddhas are sitting upright. That's not a surprise, is it? Buddhas are sitting upright. Where do they sit? They're sitting in the middle of all living beings. They're living in the midst of fierce flames of cruelty and abuse and kindness. And compassion, they're living in the middle of everything, upright. They're not living in that place where there's no cruelty. They're living in the middle of all cruelty. Turning the wheel of Dharma, realizing great compassion. Great compassion lives with great cruelty. If we had not great cruelty, I would work on accepting that. But we seem to have great cruelty these days. If somebody says, no, we don't have great cruelty, we just have a little bit of cruelty, okay, we can work with that too. If cruelty is actually going up and down, okay, we work with that. I do not know how to measure the level of cruelty in the world right now. I don't know if it's more than during World War II. But it's immense, right? There's immense, just awesome levels of cruelty, which means there's awesome levels of fear and etc. And Buddhas are sitting in the middle of all that, upright, compassionate to it all, compassionate to the compassionate ones, compassionate to the cruel ones. And that compassion turns the wheel of Dharma. That's going on. We are being called to sit in that place, which is where we are. Each of us is sitting at the center of all living beings right now. We can try to get away. And trying to get away from our seat is a living being. One of the living beings is the one who wants to get away from the seat. Another living being is the one who wants to sit at the seat. But sitting in the seat is not wanting to be there and not wanting to not be there. It's being in the middle of wanting to be there and not wanting to be there. And when we sit, those critters visit us. I want to sit here some more. I don't want to sit here some more. I sat here long enough. I haven't sat here long enough. Such things have come up this weekend, perhaps, to somebody. Is that like clear?
Yeah. You were talking about opening up to the fact that we are not separate from all living beings.
Yeah.
You also used the term realizing or completely realizing. Those terms, opening up to, completely realizing, are those something other than perceptions?
Yes, they are. Thank you for the question. Did you hear it? It is possible to open up without perceiving it. Like you could be perceiving a jet airplane flying over. That could be your perception. Jet airplane. Simultaneously, at that very moment, you open to whatever you said. What did you say? Open to what?
Being together with all beings.
Yeah. So you're looking at the airplane and you open to being in harmony with all beings at that very moment. But what you're perceiving is an airplane. If you're a nursing mother, it might be like looking at an airplane and a baby cries. And you might even not perceive the baby cries, but your breasts secrete milk onto your blouse. Do women still wear blouses?
Yes.
Your milk ducts opened, but you didn't perceive it. You're releasing nourishment to the crying baby, but you were perceiving an airplane at that very moment. You didn't perceive this opening. Now, someone might say, if you were looking at an airplane and you open to the inconceivable, imperceptible accord with all beings, which fully resonates through all time. In other words, if you open to Zazen while you were looking at a jet airplane, would you be filled with joy? What's the answer?
Yes.
Yeah, you'd be like filled with joy. And you would start leaping around with joy. But you might not perceive it. You might be just seeing the airplane. Now later somebody might say to you, did you notice that you were jumping around? Was I? Oh. Are you full of joy? Well, yeah. Now that you asked. When Buddhas are fully Buddhas, they don't necessarily perceive. Hey! A Buddha here. When Buddha activity is fully Buddha activity, when Zazen is really Zazen, it does not necessarily think, oh, this is really Zazen. It doesn't necessarily think that. Some people are sitting in this retreat and fully practicing Zazen, but they did not think, oh, I'm fully practicing Zazen. And some people did, and they told me about it. But the perception of being a person is not the same as being a person. Even though persons, people, do perceive, your perceptions are not the same as you. Like if you perceive me as a nice guy, that's not you, that's a perception, and you happen to be there. But I'm there too. So perceptions are part of the deal. They're like conversation pieces. They're like opportunities to demonstrate Buddha activity, but they don't apply to the Buddha. Like we say in the chant, all this, what's all this? All this Buddha activity does not appear within perception, but it doesn't eliminate the perception. The Buddha activity is the way the perceptions are liberating each other. Buddha perception is the way the perceptions are liberating the feelings, and the feelings are liberating the frogs. It's the way everything's working together to be in peace and harmony. That's Buddha activity. However, that's not one of the perceptions. It's the way the perceptions are harmonizing, which is not a perception. Like, again, we can be singing together, we can be chanting together, and we harmonize. But it's possible, unlikely, but it's possible that nobody in the group at the moment of harmony thought, hey, we finally harmonized. And yet we harmonized. And then later, the chanting was recorded, and later somebody said, oh, they harmonized. But at the moment of harmonization, nobody noticed it. But everybody was filled with joy and wanted to keep practicing like that forever. And then you say, well, one person did perceive it. Oh, it's okay. But the perception is not the harmony. Just like you can watch somebody, a ballet dancer, and perceive her. But your perception of her is not her. It's perceiving a ballet dancer is not being a ballet dancer. But you can perceive her, and your perception of her imperceptibly accords with her. But it's not her. Okay? You're welcome. So again, when we sit, we do sit. You are sitting. We sit. And we don't make ourselves still. We are still. Always. We're where we are. We're not someplace else. And then we're someplace else. But when we're there, we're there. We're not someplace else. We're always still. And the appearance of movement can be perceived. But we're always in the present still. We remember the stillness. We sit upright. And then we also remember this upright stillness is in imperceptible accord with all things. And this way that this sitting is according with all things and resonating through all times, this is the Buddha activity right now, right here, and it includes everybody. So it's right now here, and it's all other beings being included. And also this way of being is included in all beings. This is what's going on, and I'm sitting here remembering that, honoring that, and saying, this is what's important in life, is saving all beings. Right now. And when you get up and stand, it's the same. When you walk, it's the same. This walking is, I'm remembering stillness as I walk. And I'm remembering that this walking imperceptibly accords with all beings. In other words, I'm remembering Zen practice. And Zen practice is partly to remember Zen practice.
This is probably semantics, but
yeah.
You said that we are not different from all beings.
Right.
And you said that we are not separate from all beings.
Both.
I feel a difference between those two.
Yeah. Well,
I feel that
maybe that's why I said both, so you can see that those are two different ways that aren't. We're not separate, and we're not different. We're both, and they're different. What do you call it? Different facets of the jewel of what we are together. Different ways to look at the jewel of our relationship. One is that we're not separate. One is that we're not different. And also, I can say that another way to look at it is we mutually include each other. You include me, I include you. That's another way to put it. But even though, and also to say further, semantically, the way I include you doesn't confine you. The way I include you doesn't limit you. You get to be you, even though you're included in me. And I get to be me in my various ways. Even though I'm included in you, you don't confine me or constrict me. As a matter of fact, the way I'm included in all of you is my freedom. And the way you're included in me is your freedom. And the way you include everyone is your freedom. And my freedom. Our freedom is shared and mutually included and reciprocal. That's Buddha activity, yes.
So another way of thinking of it is that this is the practice of liberating the all-inclusive self of all beings?
Yeah. Yeah, that's another way to put it.
What?
Say it again.
It's the practice of liberating the all-inclusive self of all beings.
And also liberating the illusion of not all-including self of all beings. Because there's quite a few beings have this non-inclusive self. And that one is calling for compassion and liberation. That's the one that the language in the consciousness comes up with, wanting to get rid of that one. Getting rid of it. I'm sick of this non-inclusive self. I'm sick of this selfish self. I want to get rid of it and get the unselfish self. Yes.
And that is exactly the entry into what I wanted to, what the I. It's different from I, the I.
Mm-hmm.
And so perception, zazen, liberation, freedom, peace exists even without me.
Well,
it's there already.
Well, do you want to have a conversation about that? Or do you want to just tell me that? Well, do you want to have a conversation?
No, it's whatever you may have in regards to what I just said. The perception.
Well, that's part of it, but also another part of it is: do you want me to talk to me about that? Do you want to have a conversation?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, conversation. I could say something now about what you said, because you missed part of yesterday, right?
Yeah, I only caught the tail end.
Yeah. So you just said that it exists. Okay? Do you remember what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. So at that point, over here, there was like, wait a minute. And the wait a minute was, what you're talking about and what I'm talking about is not confined to existing. And it's not confined to not existing. But normally, human beings want to say, this thing exists or doesn't exist. Buddha activity or freedom exists. Freedom exists. So I'm saying, freedom is here right now. Freedom is not separate from right now. Freedom is not different from this conversation I'm having with Raphael.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm having a conversation with Raphael, and I'm also having a conversation with
Susan.
Who?
Susan.
So I'm having a dual conversation with, and I'm also conversing with you guys too, right? So we're having this conversation, and in the conversation, I'm saying that the conversation is always here. The Buddha activity, freedom, is always here. It's not separate from here and this. But it's also not this. It's not this, and it's not different from this. It's the conversation between this and everything else. And that freedom, I do not say it exists. I just say it's not separate from here or different from this. I also don't say it doesn't exist. I do not agree that freedom does not exist. I do not agree with that. I disagree with the statement freedom does not exist. But I also disagree with freedom does exist. Freedom is free of existence and non-existence. That's real freedom. That's the freedom of Buddhas, is not being stuck in existence or non-existence. So it's here. It's really what our life is. But our life is not something you can put in the box of existence or non-existence. You can say it exists, but then if you're in conversation with me, I say, wait a minute. Let's look at that. I don't agree with that. That this one, the most wonderful thing in the universe, or the most wonderful thing about the universe, is the way the universe is leaping beyond the universe, and that leaps beyond existence and non-existence. And it's, and that way that the universe is leaping beyond itself and bringing everything with it, and the way everything's bringing the universe, that way is free of existence and non-existence. But to be free of existence and non-existence, we have to be kind to the idea of existence, the perception of existence. Like, I perceive that Sonia has her fingers on her fingers, and now she's looking at me and she's smiling. I perceive that, but I don't have to say that that exists. But I might slip into that. Sonia exists. This bell exists. Raphael exists. Okay, fine. But I don't, you know, and I'm not going to fight that. I'm just going to be kind to that. And by being kind to Raphael exists, the bell exists, John exists, by being kind to that, I will realize freedom from John exists. Various Johns exist. I do see the existence, and I am kind to the existence. And that is the path to be free of the existence of various types of Johns and Raphaels and Ivans and so on and Rebs. So I do not agree that Buddha activity exists. I just say it's not other than this. And this also is not it. However, this is not separate from it, and this can realize it. Now, you want to say something else, Raphael?
Not now.
Okay.
Since we're using words, you know, I latch onto the words and I latch onto the ideas and I just play with them. And yeah. It's like a little shell game.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking of is non-existence, things don't exist, that's a conception.
Mm-hmm.
Existence, that's kind of a conception.
Mm-hmm.
That things are, Buddha activity is imperceptible, that's a conception.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep coming back to, you know, like, there's a tendency to equate the world of conception with the imperceptible Buddha activity because they're integrated. So right away, for me, that sets up a duality.
Mm-hmm.
And then the word that comes back to me is inconceivable, which kind of says it's not conception to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can't conceive of it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's that, it's just like another trap to say inconceivable, then I'm conceiving of inconceivable.
Or you could say it's another danger.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a turning point.
You're right.
Are you going to go jump into the trap?
Yeah.
Or are you going to use this as an opportunity to say, hi, trap.
Yeah, yeah.
Later, man.
And I hesitate to do this, but since we're using a lot of terms and everything, and I haven't visited this term in a long time, but emptiness,
mm-hmm.
to me, I would suggest that with inconceivability.
Yeah.
Because it's non-substantial. And
I would not necessarily inconceivability, but rather freedom from conceiving.
Freedom from conceiving because you can't grasp it. Except you through cognition.
Well, you can't grasp emptiness, but also emptiness is the way you can't grasp anything.
Right. Okay.
And emptiness, when things are free or innocent of conception, then you can't grasp them.
Okay. So it seems to me, and this is all kind of another trap, is that
Another opportunity, another crisis. Another opportunity to fall into a trap. He's going to give us, here's another opportunity, and you could fall into what he's going to bring up.
Okay.
It's an opportunity to do that, but it's also a danger to do that.
Oh.
And it's an opportunity not to fall into what John says.
Oh, my God. No, I've forgotten.
John has the opportunity to talk away.
Bad John.
And forget about what he's saying and accept that he forgot this brilliant thing he was going to say.
Okay, I'm going to hold this for just one more second.
Okay.
And, you know, it's that thing where if your keys and you're looking for them and they're in your pocket, you really didn't lose them. They're just right in your pocket. I will revisit my questions.
Okay. We use words in the Buddha way to free people of words. And not just that, but we use words to realize what is beyond words. We're already stuck in words. Our consciousness is word land. Words, that's our medium of exchange in consciousness with ourselves and others. And we're confined by that. And we're now using, and that's our trap, is words. But there's a way of using words to liberate us from the words, and not only that, but help us enter the realm that's free of words, where there's something, it's not that there's nothing there, it's just that there's something there that's free of existence and non-existence, that's free of words. And when we realize that, then we use words to help other people realize it. Yes?
Free of discriminating mind is not lack of the existence of discriminating mind.
I agree.
Comes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Freedom of discriminating mind is not lack of it. It's the fulfillment of it.
Essentially just restated my question, which is, I appreciate.
Yeah.
Sometimes we talk of karmic consciousness or human consciousness, and it just seems like that's what we have to work with, right?
Yep, we have
that. That's it.
No, we have more to work with, but we can't work with the other stuff if we skip over the karmic consciousness.
Right.
So you got to like, okay, I'm not going to, karmic consciousness is the land of trouble. I want to get on to the next stage, please.
Right.
So we have, all we have is karmic consciousness, but there's more to work with. We just don't have it.
Right.
Part of our life we don't have, because it doesn't get, part of our life doesn't go into the category of having it. Like, I don't have all of you, but you're my life. But I, there's part of my life I have, and I that's where I'm in trouble.
But that's the part of our life that we tend to, that's where our thoughts live.
That's where
we tend to believe very heavily.
That's
get
where we
trapped.
That's
and
where we get self-righteous.
Right.
That's where we hate people. That's where we think we're better than other people. And that whole realm is calling for compassion. And that's not the whole story. But if you don't take care of that one, you don't get to realize the rest of the situation. I take it away. It's not, I said it wasn't the whole story. I would say that's not the whole of our life. Part of our life is in storyland, and part of our life's beyond stories. If you take care of storyland, you open to what's beyond stories. Same with language. So some Zen students want, they don't want to talk anymore. and they say that.
Yes. I would like to talk some more.
He's not one. You're not one of those.
I'm not. I'm one of the others. So yesterday I asked about path, and I felt good with the response of that it has two points, or a point and a direction, and it doesn't. And now this morning with the conversation again about Buddha activity, the words that come into my head as I'm perceiving that have a past, a present, and a future, or a smear of those, or something like that. Is the is throughout time, or is the is just in this moment?
Is. And if anybody adds existence to that is, I would say, be careful. And if you add non-existence to the is, I say, be careful. Don't fall into the pit of that is exists or doesn't exist.
Or existed or will exist.
Yeah, watch out for those guys too. Or I could say, watch out for those chickadees also. Is. Not. And is surrounded by lots of fierce flames. And some of the fierce flames of, it exists, and it doesn't exist. Hi, fierce flames. I'm here with, right now, is. Now I'm here with not. Whatever. If you're with it, completely, etc. Not complete, you know, in the complete wholehearted being there, you'll be free of it. And being with it wholeheartedly means you love it into freedom. And you don't abandon it. You give it your full life, and then you and it are free together with all beings. Yes.
I have a microphone. This is kind of a prosaic story, but it came to me as an example of what you're talking about in a kind of funny way. So I'm risking telling this story, which is that once Some years ago, I was at a conference, and it was in Las Vegas, and I was with some people from my work, so we had some extra time, and we went to see a show called The Blue Man Group. And I found this show very compelling, and I was completely, I lost myself in the show. I was drumming. It's a lot of drumming. It has a lot of drumming, and I was drumming along with the show, and I was completely lost in the show. And at some point, I looked over at my colleague, and my colleague was completely still and apparently, you know, unmoved, or, you know, just in a, you know, very observant mode. There was no visible expression on her face or anything, just watching the show. And I think at that time I thought, well, you know, there's only one kind of reaction one should have to this show, which is to be totally involved in it. And now, after hearing your teaching, I'm more opening to, well, the way she was a completely full expression of engagement in the show, too. And that's what I'm feeling from today. That's what we have to keep opening to, is like, oh, so many different ways of responding.
Amen.
I also like to verbalize a story, and that is, wow. How blind. The I, the me, the we can become. Wow.
Did you want to speak again, Rafael?
So, I would like to ask, how can I be liberated from words? I'm looking at...
That's a good thing to ask for. The path to be liberated from words.
What is the path or the journey to be liberated from the internal, the external dialogue, the dialogue of attachment and non-attachment, the dialogue of freedom and slavery, or oppression and liberation? How can one find a path that is not being pulled in either direction? It seems like for me, the habits, the addiction that I'm seeking to be liberated from means that I have to attach myself to the opposite of addiction and...
No. It seems that way, but that's not correct. That's not the path. The path is of being free from addiction is not to attach to the opposite of it. So, you well express some dualities that would be good to be free of, which are stories. So freedom from words, freedom from dualities, freedom from stories. The path of freedom from them is to love them into freedom. And love means not to fall into liking them or disliking them.
Or repressing them
or facilitating them. If you are repressing them, then the path of freedom from repression is to love the repression into freedom. Not to eliminate it, but to love it with your total being, and your total being is not just yours. To love it with the total being of the universe. Give the whole universe of love to repression, to existence, to non-existence, to whatever story it is, and that is the and we are in that process right now.
What does loving it, showing kindness and compassion to it, look like?
It actually doesn't look like anything, but it is like generosity doesn't necessarily look like generosity, but it is generosity, and ethical discipline, and patience, and diligent effort. Those are the practices, but those practices don't look like it. They are it. They are the way to love these stories. Be generous towards them. Let them be. Let them in the house. And once they're in the house, be careful of them, because these words, these ideas are dangerous if you're not careful of them. But if you're careful of them and you're gentle with them, then you can be patient with them, and then you can be diligent with them, and you can relax with them and be playful with them and be free of them. But you have to be generous and ethical and patient with these ideas in order to be free of them. And we are learning that, all of us, learning how to be that kind of love, which is not liking or disliking. It is welcoming and being gracious. It is being careful and tender with all of our ideas inwardly, all of our ideas outwardly, with everything we meet. Be respectful and tender and careful. And if we notice that we're not being tender and respectful and careful, then we have the practice of saying, I noticed I wasn't respectful. I'm sorry. I wasn't careful. I'm sorry. That's part of ethics. I wasn't attentive. I'm sorry. I wasn't listening. I'm sorry. All these things are part of ethical discipline that we're trying to develop. We are learning how to do it, and we sometimes notice that we slip, so then we acknowledge it and say we're sorry. This is part of love. Loving our stories into freedom.
I've been recently having the opportunity to practice humility, which is what you just spoke
about. Yeah, yeah. Humility is an essential part of love, and part of humility is to listen to people rather than, you know, not listen to them. And also listen to yourself. You're crying for compassion. Everybody else is crying for compassion. All of our stories are crying for compassion. All of our stories want to be free. And they're not going to be free until they get the compassion that they're asking for. And also, in a way, they have kind of high standards for the compassion they want. They don't want just one application of a compassion. That was compassion, but that's not it. I want more. And then like, well, that's unreasonable. Okay, well then, forget it. No, I want more. Okay, I want more. Okay, you're going to get more. There's no end to the compassion. But somewhere in the process, even though the compassion is endless, at some point in the compassion, in the process of compassion. The story says, okay, that's enough. I'm letting go. I'm free. Thank you. You can continue with the compassion, but I'm free. Thank you so much. The story is free, and you're free of me. I'm free of you. Yeah. So, love the stories. Love the language. Love the discriminations. If you love them, they won't get in the way, and they won't separate. They won't seem to separate you and your life and me and my life from Buddha activity. That situation is already not separated, but we have to be kind to any perception or idea of separation. We have to. We're being asked to. And if we are, that's our job. We're being asked to. That's our responsibility, and it's the great working. It's the work. It's the Buddha work. Yes.
I wonder if we could take this example a little farther. Raphael said a word that I hate, which is slavery.
Yeah.
And I think, in my opinion, that history poisons this country.
Yes.
And
it's poison. It poisons.
So thinking about being compassionate to it is a little bit tricky. You know, something that's so toxic. And
yeah, I think so. We got now poison. Got poison. Something that poisons a whole culture. Okay. Then we have the word tricky. That's another thing here. So you have to deal with poison. And tricky. So I'm saying we need to be compassionate towards tricky too.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is that in being compassionate, I don't want to say that's okay.
No, compassion actually doesn't say that very often. When somebody's suffering, compassion doesn't say it's okay. If a person's suffering, they don't need you to tell them they're okay. They need you to be there. They don't need to tell themselves that it's okay when they're in extreme misery. What they need is to learn how to love their misery, not say it's okay. Compassion isn't dishing out, judgments. Compassion is applied to judgments that are being dished out. So if there's suffering and somebody's saying okay, we are called to be compassionate towards the suffering and the person who just said it was okay. Avalokiteshvara Tetsvara is not going around saying, that's okay, that's okay. They're listening. They're showing how to be with it. And if we are with the suffering and kind to the suffering of slavery, there will be liberation. And the application has been done. We're doing it, but it's not over. It hasn't succeeded in liberating the poison. There hasn't been enough compassion addressed. How many hundreds of years was the poison operating? Is it still operating? If it's still operating, then it's going to be many more years of work to bring compassion into all this karmic history. And the Buddha activity is not saying, you know, when's this going to end? I've been working so long. Buddha activity is like enthusiastic. We're going to keep doing this open-endedly. We're not like trying to finish the job. We're just going to keep this going forever. And obviously we have not yet been successful at healing this wound. But we're going to keep working on it. We want to. It's good work is to bring compassion to disease and poison. Like my grandson, my sweet grandson, poisoned himself with trying to get away from suffering. He took poison because he wanted to feel okay. And now we have to love this horrible situation of all this poison circulating in our cities and the children eating it. We have to bring compassion to that, and compassion to the children, to teach them that so they use compassion rather than drugs. We need to teach them how to use compassion rather than drugs. We have to teach ourselves how to use compassion rather than drugs. And it's hard because the suffering is coming all the time. Sweet little boys and girls are poisoning themselves in an attempt to free themselves from suffering. And they are calling us before and after they poison themselves.
I recently did some research. Right now, that sounds like an unintentional death, I'm hoping. But yeah, actually, suicide is...
Yeah, he was trying to feel good. But the street drugs, you know, they have drugs now that are hundreds of times more powerful than heroin.
And that's the number one cause of youth from the age, well, young people, ages 10 to 34, according to the CDC. The number two is suicide. Some overdoses are seen as suicide, but I think they count as unintentional for the most part. So there's a lot of people trying to escape suffering and end their lives.
Yeah, everybody's trying to escape. The Buddha activity is not trying to escape suffering. The Buddha activity is sitting in the middle of it, not trying to escape it, not trying to escape it, trying to love it. Buddha activity is not trying to escape it. It's trying to show love rather than escape or destroy. Destroy suffering, escape suffering, eliminate suffering. That's a part of the culture. And drugs are eliminate suffering, escape suffering. Buddha activity is, how can we open to the suffering? We do it by supporting each other. We do it by conversation. We do it by generous, ethical, patient, enthusiastic, calm, relaxed conversation with the suffering.
Is accepting it?
That's part of it, definitely. But after you accept it, now you've got the poison to deal with. And now we have to be careful of it and be vigilant. Don't accept it and then look away. Accept it and pay attention to it. And then it's painful, so be patient with it and so on. This is about fully engaging it to liberate it, not pushing it away to be liberated. Yes.
What was the question that Raphael...
He said, is acceptance... He said, is it acceptance? And I said, acceptance is part of it.
Okay, that's okay. Got it.
Yeah. Acceptance is part of it. Acceptance is part of generosity. But you can accept something and then not be careful of it. Like you can accept somebody's suffering, and then after you accept it, you can say, you know, that's okay, or you're a big girl.
Hmm? And then walk away.
Yeah, you can walk away. After you let this thing in the house, you should not walk away. You should stay with it. Be its host or hostess. So we are, we're doing fine. We're getting in there to the Buddha activity. Yes. Yes.
This morning, in sitting, I keep thinking of the Tonglen.
Tonglen. Mm-hmm.
Tonglen meditation.
Yeah. Tonglen is a way of dealing with the dark, poisonous, horrible manifestations of life. To learn how to bring it in and meet and give it compassion and then breathe out the healing.
It helps with the exercise of reducing the boundaries between.
Well, again, it's not reducing the boundaries, it's working with the boundaries to be free of them. To try to reduce boundaries, I don't think that's compassion isn't trying to reduce. the problems. It's taking the problems as they're given and saying, thank you, Bondri. You know, how can I serve you to be free? Diffuse? Yeah, so I would not diffuse. I don't agree. Not like you come to me with your problems, I'm going to diffuse them. You don't want me to diffuse.
No, I mean, like, the problem you have
does
tend to come through me.
Oh, yeah. Be more permeable. Open. Yeah, open, not diffuse. Yeah, open. Open the boundaries. And the way you open them is by letting them be boundaries. And when you realize the boundaries are doors. They're doors to liberation. They're board doors to freedom. Walls are doors to freedom. If you treat them with compassion, which means you like let them be and you're just there with them completely, they take off their mask and say, I was actually all along a door. I came to you to show you freedom, and you treated me appropriately, and now you get to have what I came to give you. Yes?
We're in a dangerous situation. Say we're...
We are in a dangerous situation.
So we're in a dangerous...
We're in a crisis. There's danger.
Yeah.
We got danger all around.
Yeah.
And we have opportunity.
And in the danger, we notice holding tension fists. You know,
holding, that's another danger.
Yeah. Like as we
so
want...
So there's this danger, and then there's grasp, there's tensing, that's another danger.
We want to turn away.
There's danger all around.
All around. And then we notice... silence and stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And
so maybe we don't even notice it. Maybe we just remember it.
Or remember it.
Yeah.
Is this pivoting? Is this the place?
That's the opportunity. Is right in the middle of, what'd you say?
The
danger.
And
then another danger in response to the danger.
Yes.
Right in the middle of that. When you remember stillness, you have just realized the opportunity.
The opportunity to practice.
The opportunity was to remember stillness, and you did. You availed yourself of the opportunity. Rather than falling into the danger, you remember stillness. Now that you remember stillness, okay, now you're ready to meet the danger. Now you're ready to be there for it, rather than fall into it. The danger is X... falling into it.
It's a sensitive place.
Sometimes it's a sensitive place. Yeah, Buddhas are in a sensitive place. Being in the center of all suffering is a sensitive place. It's a place you're sensing all this. You're being impacted by all this. There's life there. Sensitive life. But rather than try to jump out of sensitive life, we're trying to develop ability to open to it and let it be and tolerate it and be careful of it. And that's the way, in the middle of a sensitive situation, to realize peace. Thank you very much for this morning, and it's now afternoon. Maybe we could do a little service now.